Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Well, good evening. Happy Easter and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Thrilled to have you with us this evening. I hope you had a happy, joyful, and grateful Easter weekend. Thrilled to have you with us this evening at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Thrilled to have you with us. We've got an interesting show scheduled tonight. Not as many guests as usual. Harder to get guests on an Easter weekend, but that's okay. We've got a couple of them lined up. And we'll have a lot of conversation, which is always fun. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. They'll be open all throughout the show tonight at 316-869-1330. You can also reach me by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. As I mentioned, yeah, it's going to be kind of a different format tonight. We'll do a lot of talking and take a lot of phone calls. We're going to replay my exclusive interview with Riley Gaines. I had a number of people who didn't catch it when we aired it a couple weeks ago. She was in Lawrence, and so we'll kick off our 8 o'clock hour by replaying that. Writer, speaker, and political commentator Teddy Pierce will be with us later next hour to share the shocking results of a new poll that has discovered that a majority of Americans identifying as left of center politically believe that murdering President Trump would be justified. I explained that one to me. And John Comerford, executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, will walk us through the latest Second Amendment legislation working its way through Congress. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. We'll take those all throughout the show tonight, so feel free to reach out. Would love to hear from you. And, again, I hope you had a happy and blessed Easter weekend. And that's kind of the topic of tonight's introductory monologue. If voters ever needed proof of the cultural and spiritual importance of what's at stake in a presidential election, they need look no further than Easter. This year, President Donald Trump began the celebration of the Holy Week, these days leading up to the annual remembrance of Jesus Christ's resurrection from the dead, by issuing a remarkably erudite and theologically precise presidential message on Palm Sunday. And he followed that up with a recognition of the Easter holiday with a very poignant Easter message. Just 1 year ago, I remind you, President Joe Biden rang in Easter by urging Americans to celebrate the Transgender Day of Visibility. That's the contrast. We've seen this already come up. Joe Biden said there was nothing a president could do about the border. Well, look at what Donald Trump has done in less than 100 days. But look no more than a year ago on Easter Sunday and see the difference an election can make. Joe Biden honored Easter Sunday by recognizing Transgender Day of Visibility. Donald Trump commemorates Easter Sunday by commemorating what Easter Sunday really means. President Trump's Holy Week message was very telling. The president wrote, quote, "In his final hours on earth, Christ willingly endured excruciating pain, torture, and execution on the cross out of a deep and abiding love for all his creation. Through his suffering, we have redemption. Through his death, we are forgiven of our sins. Through his resurrection, we have hope of eternal life. The president went on to write, quote, on Easter morning, the stone is rolled away, the tomb is empty, and light prevails over darkness, signaling that death does not have the final word. Joe Biden celebrated this day a year ago with Transgender Day of Visibility. Donald Trump's message today continued just one public act celebrating the religious faith of America's maligned majority. By posting on True Social, he said, in that moment of his resurrection, history was forever changed with the promise of everlasting life. Indeed, the second Trump administration's White House Faith Office put together an extraordinary week-long celebration for Holy Week, declared Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, who recently appeared in a candid social media video capturing her praying before a White House press briefing. Now compare this Holy Week under the second Trump administration to the Biden-Harris administration and what they did, and their decision to divert the nation's collective attention away from Easter Sunday and direct it toward Transgender Day of Visibility, one of the endless string of LGBTQ holidays. When we were getting ready to celebrate Pride Month, keep in mind, veterans get a day. Pride gets a month. Transgender Day of Visibility last year fell on Easter, March 31st. This year, President Trump posted his statements on Palm Sunday to celebrate all the sacred events of Holy Week. Last year, Biden's White House released a high-profile statement on the Trans Day of Visibility on Good Friday, so Americans could revel in the celebration all week long, celebrating perversion. Biden rolled out his last statement on Easter Sunday itself. In both timing and substance, the Biden administration clearly saw Easter as an afterthought and chose instead to advance the LGBTQ agenda. The Easter statement released by President Biden, or whoever controlled his auto pen for that matter, amounted to six sentences featuring references to the power of hope and the blessing of the dawn of new possibilities and some bunnies and eggs and things. But in his 2024 Trans Day of Visibility proclamation, he had six paragraphs containing 675% as many words as his Easter statement. Shows you his priorities, again, or the auto pen's priorities. Biden commented about extremists attempting to prevent the transgender industry from carrying out its cross-sex hormone injections and surgeries on transgender kids and American values, as if that's what America values. The overheated rhetoric actually constituted a step down from 2023 when Biden issued a statement in a fact sheet and a presidential proclamation that declared, quote, transgender Americans shape our nation's soul, which at the time was true, but not the way Biden implied. Joe Biden spent 4 years encouraging gender confusion, hosting trans-identifying influencers, one of whom flashed his fake breasts at the White House, and promoting outright heresy by implying God approves of transgenderism. Biden told trans-identifying young people that their artificial gender identity is made in the image of God, unquote. President Trump, by contrast, in his most recent speech to a joint session of Congress, responded, our message to every child in America is that you are perfect, exactly the way God made you. So, folks, this week's changed tone proves that elections do indeed have consequences. Trump's Truth Social message is a perfect example. Quote, we need God. We want God, and with his help, we will make our nation stronger, safer, greater, more prosperous, and more united than ever before. Elections do indeed have consequences, folks, and this weekend is a perfect example. We'll take a quick break, and then John Comerford, Executive Director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, will walk us through the latest Second Amendment legislation working its way through Congress. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Dana Lash, that's an appropriate intro for my next guest. So is this song, by the way. Nicely done, Phil. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. If you're looking to get involved, we've got elections coming up, a primary, the filing deadline, not too many months away at this point. If you're still kind of figuring out where to get involved, how to get involved, I recommend that you look up my friends at Americans for Prosperity. They're always focused on helping out candidates and helping folks find a way to make their voices heard. You can visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And of course, while you're online, check out the John Whitmer Show social media pages at Facebook, True Social. And you can find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, last month, the House Judiciary Committee held a legislative markup for H.R. 38, the Constitutional Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. The bill, introduced by Congressman Richard Hudson out of North Carolina, would empower concealed carry permit owners in one state to have their permits recognized in every state. The bill, which is a huge priority for the National Rifle Association, would significantly expand Second Amendment rights nationwide. With us now is John Comerford. He is the executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action. Buddy and I used to work together when I was in the legislature. John, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Did I describe that the bill correctly? Is that that's basically what they're looking for here? Is to eliminate the confusing nature of concealed carry, you know, laws and reciprocity across all states, make it uniform, essentially.
You're exactly right. It would end the current practice of being able to defend yourself in one state and then crossing a simple state line and not being able to defend yourself. And we know the usual suspects, right? California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Massachusetts, those types of states. So it would expand those rights nationwide.
Well, and that is one of the things that I've always felt was confusing is, you know, my ability, like you said, my ability to defend myself shouldn't end at the state line just because, you know, I crossed over from, obviously, Kansas, Missouri is not the issue, but the further, you know, if you go to Illinois, you need to have it if you're going into Illinois, certain parts of it for sure, heck, sure, certain parts of East St. Louis. And, you know, it puts a burden on the carrier if they don't understand how complicated, depending on what state you're traveling into. It'd be nice if they could at least rely on their permit from their home state that protects them.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when you look at the level of severity that the criminal penalty brings for violating this in some states, there's no other law in the books that carries that level of time behind bars. If you go from Pennsylvania, which has over 1.2 million permit holders, they don't have mandatory training. You know, they trust their residents, and it's been an overwhelming success there. But if you cross the Delaware River into New Jersey, you can face up to a 3-year mandatory minimum prison sentence for lawful conduct in Pennsylvania that's unlawful in New Jersey. And it's just unacceptable. NRA's done a great job nationwide of working with other partners, with great pro-gun lawmakers, to get 29 states with constitutional carry. So we have a majority of the country that essentially lives under this standard already with zero issues and, in fact, decrease in crime rates. But yet the problem child states and these states that are petri dishes for bad ideas, they continue to not respect constitutional rights, and we need to fix that.
Well, and, you know, it really somebody could this isn't again, we're not talking about the criminals here. The criminals don't respect the laws irregardless. That's why I've always said that no matter how many gun laws or red flag laws or all the other nonsense that you pass, it's not going to stop the criminals because they don't respect the laws. But a guy who's just, you know, running across the state line because he's out to buy lottery tickets or whatever shouldn't be punished because he's just trying to,
you know, again, run errands or something like that. And your example there, the Delaware River, is a perfect example. Or maybe you're in Kansas and you go across the line because you can't do sports betting. And you I mean, sure. it's kind of asinine when you look at it. Another bill that has been introduced and I wanted to ask you about was the Firearm Due Process Protection Act, which provides legal recourse for law-abiding Americans who were improperly denied the ability to legally purchase a firearm due to, you know, administrative errors or background checks or something like that. This is another, it's one of those backdoor tactics that some of these gun control nuts are trying to use. I'm curious where that one is.
So that moved out of committee as well. So Chairman Jordan held a markup in his committee and moved that bill along with H.R. 38 out. Both are can now move on to the next step, which leads to a floor vote and then hopefully to the Senate. And I know President Trump has his Sharpie ready to sign legislation like this into law and has asked for leadership to get it to his desk. But, you know, Whip Tom Emmer is the author of this bill. And it's basically people who have been denied that ability to purchase a firearm due to simple administrative errors during a background check. So it can fix that for them. I mean, like I said, I always use an example. If your name's John Smith and you don't list your Social Security number, you try to buy a gun at Cabela's on Black Friday, let me know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a perfect example. This isn't somebody who had a convicted felon or someone who's in the country illegally. This is just a clerical error that has prevented that, and that's the kind of stuff that should be an easy fix, and yet it's prohibiting them from exercising their Second Amendment rights. We're talking with John Comerford, who's executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action. Let me kind of look a little bit in a different direction. The Department of Justice has a newly formed Second Amendment Enforcement Task Force. It's all part of the president's commitment to promote and defend America's Second Amendment rights. Is that kind of what you're seeing here with the administration? They ran on this promise, and now they're, again, it's another promise is kept.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, President Trump is showing leadership on the issue of the Second Amendment. He made that commitment to America's gun owners, and he's upholding that. And we've seen Attorney General Bondi implementing his request. So the president started with an executive order asking the attorney general to identify policies that need to be rolled back that were restrictive to the Second Amendment under Joe Biden's administration, as well as furthering that. So I think the Second Amendment Task Force will be a great mechanism to implement those ideas that come out. There is a report that was due to the executive order. It has been completed. It's just not public yet. We're hoping to see that in the very near future. But what you're seeing is some of the critical key components of what gun owners need done, getting done incrementally. They ended zero tolerance. They're looking at the engaged in the business rule. They're looking at getting rid of the brace rule that so many people have had to litigate on. So they're full steam ahead at the Department of Justice and to fix the ATF. And to roll back these policies. And I know there was a change in the leadership at ATF with Acting Director Kash Patel focusing on his full-time job, which is director of the FBI, which is clearly an immense amount of work. And Acting Director Daniel Driscoll is in there. He's also the Secretary of the Army. So NRA hopes that at some point we will have a nominee who is named by the president to be a permanent Senate confirmed director of the ATF that puts the rights of law abiding gun owners first.
John, I know I'm taking away from your family here on Easter Sunday, so I appreciate you taking the time. I got two state specific questions. You started as a state director. Let me first ask you, what's happened with Colorado? Democrat Governor Jared Polis recently signed Senate Bill 3, the most anti-gun, anti-freedom bill in Colorado history. I mean, are they just smoking too much, whatever they're smoking, ditch weed in Colorado? What is going on in Colorado?
You know, it's a race to the bottom for these state, misguided states. And Colorado is a huge disappointment in the center of our country. I mean, there's great law-abiding Americans who live in Colorado. It's a beautiful place, just full of bad ideas. And and these the transplants that have moved into Colorado are electing the wrong people. And we're seeing that. Elections have consequences.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the radical left has made a lot of inroads in Colorado from what the state used to be. So, you know, what this amounts to is they were running on basically a full gun ban, and then Governor Polis decided it was a better idea to create the Polis permission slip. So you need to bend a knee, fill out a permission slip, and get his approval before you can exercise your Second Amendment rights now in Colorado. And it's a similar model. He learned it from Maryland and New Jersey and Illinois. But you have to pay a fee, go through the process, get your permit that he approves, and then you can attempt to buy a semi-automatic rifle. So it's terrible. We opposed it from the beginning. We're very active there. We had a lot of grassroots support there, and now we're looking at what the legal options are to challenge that.
I was just going to say, I'm assuming that our buddy Travis is going to be fighting that, and I'm sure you guys will sue. Speaking of our buddy Travis, when I was in the legislature, and this goes back, I mean, now we're talking almost 10 years ago, I carried the Eddie Eagle bill here in the Kansas legislature. And for those who don't know the bill, it just aims to enhance student safety by allowing school, doesn't require, but allows school districts to implement standardized firearm safety education programs. And it simply just says, if you see a gun, if you're a kid, you see a gun, stop, don't touch, run away, tell an adult. It's very simple. Eddie Eagle program. They are still trying to get this bill passed through the Kansas legislature. What is the holdup?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's perplexing to me. This is a common sense program.
Yes.
It's trained millions and millions of America's children to be safe when they encounter a firearm. And again, it's not teaching them how to shoot.
No.
There's no guns involved. What to do. If they encounter a firearm, and I think everyone listening can agree that is a good idea. And beyond that, there's other age specific curriculum with that. So it is a great program. Again, the program's reached over 32 million children in all 50 states and Canada and Puerto Rico, and it works. I'm perplexed to this day why this isn't in the statute in Kansas, but. With that said, there's always next year, and we're going to keep pushing for that.
Yeah, well, it would help if we had a governor who wasn't anti-gun and anti-freedom. And John, I appreciate you as always, my friend. If folks want to connect with you, they can find you on X at J Comerford. It's C-O-M-M-E-R-F-O-R-D. And online, it's N-R-A-I-L-A.org, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Appreciate you, my friend. Have a happy Easter. Thank you again for joining us this evening.
Same to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Great interview. It's amazing that the Eddie Eagle bill is still stuck in the Kansas legislature, again, elections have consequences. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you, you can also listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And of course, from breaking news to severe weather updates, just download the Always Live free Odyssey app in order to get started. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer in order to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, the United States Constitution affirms the fundamental right of parents to make decisions about their own child's education, health care, and religious upbringing. But this right is now being threatened by many state agencies and courts throughout the country, thanks to a wave of transgender activism. I think we'd be in a worse state, obviously, if Kamala Harris was president. With us now to share some of the stories that we're seeing out of some of these radical states is my next guest, who can give us kind of a firsthand, shall we say, a warning, shall we say, is Edward Bartlett. He is founder of SAVE, which is an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. Edward, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us this evening, and happy Easter, my friend.
And happy Easter to yourself, John.
So, you know, the first one that comes to mind is this, the case, and I saw a story on this not too long ago, Jeff Younger. He's the Texas father who lost his years-long battle in the courts to keep his ex-wife from allowing their preteen son, who identifies as a girl named now Luna, to receive gender-affirming care. And I've seen this guy. I've seen him talk to the press. I've seen some interviews with him. And it's interesting because when he talks to his son, the boy's like, well, mommy wants me to do this, and mommy wants me to be a girl, and so since mommy wants this, I do this. But it seems like it's really the mother that's pressing this, and yet even in a conservative, deep red state like Texas, they're allowing it.
Yeah, when people talk about the transgenderism and the transgender threat to society, people tend to think of about women's sports. And of course, yes, that is a serious threat. But I would argue that the far greater threat is the threat that transgenderism poses to the nuclear family.
Yes.
And the rights of parents to exercise their constitutionally affirmed rights to oversee the upbringing of their own children. And you're right about Texas. That is a surprise decision. But we have to realize that every court around the country, in a sense, in many ways, is reigns over its own. It has its own previous decisions. It has its own personalities, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, every district court has, I believe, about 15 or 20 different judges, and that judge is the judge for a given case. Is selected at random generally, and it's you know, you have no idea what the luck of the draw is going to be for a given case.
Yeah, and if the legislature hasn't passed a law that specifically protects or gives, in this case, parental rights, well, then it's up to a judge. And if you happen to get an activist, well, then this is what happens. You've got the other case that I read the other day, Jeremy and Mary Cox. This is an Indiana couple who lost custody of their trans teen when the Department of Child Services recommended, again, to a county judge that the teen be placed in a home that, quote, affirms the kid's identity. I mean, here you literally have the county judge taking away a parent's, the parent's child, all because this teen is choosing another identity. I mean, again, this is it reeks of governmental overreach to me.
Well, absolutely, yes. And it really speaks to the assault, the cultural assault that we are seeing around our country right now in many different areas. And I think actually the worst example of this whole phenomenon is in the state of Colorado.
Yes.
They're actually looking, they're debating a bill right now. It's HB 251312. And it basically, they have not passed this bill, but it's so crazy. I'll tell you what it says. It says it doesn't matter what the child wants if the child wants to change their pronouns. It's if the other parent insists that the child, in fact, is, you know, the wrong biology in the wrong body or whatever. That if the other parent contests that proposition, that other parent can be charged with coercive control. So, and of course, coercive control is now considered a form of domestic abuse.
Right,
so,
parental abuse.
Right. So we're looking at a cancer in our society. It's a cancer with many different tentacles going in many different directions, women's sports being one of them, the pronoun debates in schools is another one of them. And there's so many horror stories, and I'll tell you one of them. This involved a teenage girl in the state of Virginia. And one day she decided that she really thought she was a boy now. She started using the boys' bathroom, and well, the boys were not too thrilled with that. She dropped out of school. She got caught up in a sex trafficking ring.
Oh boy.
She was taken to Maryland, later ended up in Texas. And of course, all of this was kept secret from the parents, right?
Ugh.
Parents were, they knew that she was not in school, but she didn't know the details of this. But finally, the parents caught up with her in Texas, brought her back, and now the parents have sued the school for keeping the parents in the dark. So this truly is a cancer that has so many horrible different outcomes.
We're talking with Edward Bartlett, founder of SAVE, which is an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. You mentioned the bill in Colorado, the HB 25-1312. You know, one of the aspects of that I find most shocking, it's the bill that one parent can declare that their child is LGBTQ or transgender or whatever, and then accuse the other parent of abuse or coercive control. One of the elements of that I find so shocking is even if the child never expresses that identity themselves, the kid doesn't even have to say they're LGBT. One parent can say it, and therefore it just is. I mean, this, it's so vile. It's so invasive. It's so precludes parental rights. And yet, it's just pandering to this minority, this woke minority. And yet, it's already passed through the Colorado House, and it's now sitting in the Colorado Senate, correct?
Correct. It has not been enacted into law. That's part of the reason why we decided to publicize this insanity in our press release, because, I mean, every citizen in Colorado that has half a brain to speak out against.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that it's Orwellian in its nature. I mentioned SAVE, your organization. SAVE stands for Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. Can you tell us a little bit about it? If folks were interested, if they want to help, if they want to get involved, if they want more information.
Yeah, sure. So here's our website address is SAVEServices.org, SAVEServices.org. We used to be focused primarily on campus due process, you know, male students being falsely accused of sexual misconduct. But with this new Title IX regulation that Biden was pushing, we just had decided we had to broaden our focus to the basically the weaponization of Title IX. And we actually did succeed in blocking that regulation. It was rescinded. It was blocked by a judge from Kentucky. But that doesn't mean all that the activists at the state levels
right.
have stopped their stuff. They are continuing their hard work.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate that you're doing is it's not only the students. You also work to assure that faculty members are afforded their constitutional protections, because I've heard stories of faculty members that have been retaliated against by their institution, by their employers, basically, for standing up for this. And I think that's something that people forget here is, you know, there are teachers. We've had a case here in Kansas where a teacher was fired because they refused to comply. They wanted to tell parents about what was going on. And that's part of the insidious nature of this whole left-wing trans movement.
Yeah, I've been told, and I think this is a correct figure, there are 12 million children right now in the U.S. that are attending schools that have these secrecy policies.
Yep.
Secrecy meaning that the parents are kept in the dark about anything related to transgender, you know, discussions with their own child. 12 million children in such schools. So this is really widespread, pretty much, you know, we've looked at some states, you know, we think pretty much every state has at least one or two school districts. So, yeah, it is a cancer in our society. You mentioned about faculty members. Yes, there was actually a case in Ohio where a faculty member refused to use the gender pronouns of a student, and the faculty member was actually disciplined. The faculty member fought back and actually filed a lawsuit. I think he won $500,000 eventually, yep. But it's just the kind of insanity that's happening, and it's going to get worse if we just continue to sort of let things slide along.
We had the same case in Kansas where the same thing happened and the faculty member won. Edward, I appreciate you again. If folks are interested, the organization is SAVE, and if people are interested and they want more information, it's saveservices.org. Thank you again, my friend. I hope you had a very happy Easter. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you again, my friend.
Thanks so much, John. Be in touch.
Thank you, sir. We'll take a quick break. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. Every week, AFP is engaging folks all across the state on issues that matter to you. Folks, you have the power to change the trajectory of our city and our state. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. So, you know, I got to address something that came out. This came out, let's see, about a week ago. Phil, I don't know if you saw this. This was a story that the mayor Lily Wu shared, and it was about some emails that she got. I mean, this whole Transgender Day proclamation, the left has been enjoying it, relishing it. The Wichita Eagles, I mean, they're actually probably selling newspapers for a change, trying to get coverage out of this. But so Mayor Wu shared some emails that she received. Did you see the post that she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I can't read all of it because it was vulgar, but I can read some of it. This email was sent to her on Friday, April 11th, to Lily Wu, L Wu at, and her email address. Subject: Re Sheena, Shina. And it says Sheena Chink. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah. Racist starts off right there. Racist. Love, peace, hope, and happiness. So typical liberals there, the tolerant left for you. Transphobic, racist, you're done. Go back to Guatemala where you effing belong. Don't you ever run for mayor again because you may be deported. Hey, here comes Ice Ice Baby. Love, peace, hope, and happiness. This is the left for you. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're trans, if you're whatever, if you disagree, I trust me, I got death threats when I was in the legislature. I got people mad at me for some of my votes. If you want to disagree with her, disagree with her.
Yeah. You're more than welcome.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is vile and disgusting. But you know what else is vile and disgusting? I've not heard a single Democrat come out and condemn this.
No.
Where's Brandon Johnson? Where's Maggie Ballard? Where's the Democrats on the city council? How come they're not condemning? Where's Hoheisel? How come he's not condemning this?
I follow Lily Wu's Facebook page, and it's maybe not quite as bad because Facebook, of course, has some.
I'd block every one of these. I would block all this crap if I were her.
I see what she deals with from Facebook.
This is the open disrespect for her. And I mean, this is disgusting that you would put this and the silence from the left
is
on
deafening.
This is deafening. And frankly, it's also very telling. And I think that's the sad part in all of this is how silent the folks on that side of the aisle are. We'll take a quick break and then we'll play my interview with Riley Gaines from a couple weeks ago. You're listening to John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles now by texting AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show social media pages, Facebook, True Social, and of course, follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show.
Roddy, thank you again. It's so nice to see you again. And in the liberal bastion, I went to KU, by the way. So this is the UC Berkeley of the Midwest. So I'm warning you. I hope you're ready for it.
I had no idea, right? I think you have in your mind that these conservative states, right? I know you guys have a liberal governor, but these conservative states, for the most part, are, you know, bastions of freedom. But what I've seen pretty much across the board, especially these academic institutions, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't even matter if you're on a Christian campus, like a smaller private school. It doesn't matter if you're at Cal Berkeley. It's all the same. They've been totally infiltrated by activists.
Oh, absolutely. And KU, I know from my own time here, KU is without a doubt one of the most liberal you're going to find. So hopefully the crowd is happy tonight. I know the folks out front that I talked to earlier were not too happy to have you here, but I'm happy to have you here. So speaking of college campuses, I do want to ask you, I just saw earlier this week, you went back to the University of San Francisco where you had that lovely warm reception a while ago. How was the reception this time around?
Well, as you could probably imagine, of course, the protest, the people who, I mean, want to throw me off a bridge, they still exist. And they're rearing their head, right? Like, I think most people are under the impression, maybe believe, that with Donald Trump back in office, all of this is over. These protesters are relentless, the people on the other side. And when I say the other side, I don't even really mean that in a political partisan way. I mean the other side of common sense, right? Mm-hmm. But that being said, the support was tenfold in comparison to 2 years ago. And I think that speaks to the shift that we have seen amongst the general public, how people are just more bold and more willing to put their face to something like this. Because again, 2 years ago, people wouldn't show up because they were scared to be associated with even being there, with even asking questions, with being curious, with wanting to learn about what was happening. It was, you know, effectively suicide for them in terms of their social circles and you know, their academic opportunities, whatever it is, career opportunities. They were terrified of being there. That wasn't the case this time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I think you're right. I think people are finally, not only are they waking up to the resistance, but they're waking up to letting their voices be heard. And they're willing to step out and say, no, this is wrong. And you're seeing it more and more. I noticed you're starting to use the hashtag boycott. And we're seeing it more and more. I mean, we saw the disc golfer who stepped away, you know, the fencer who actually wouldn't compete. We're finally starting to see more and more of these courageous women who are saying, no, I'm not going to compete against a biological male. We're going to have to see more of that, aren't we, sadly?
Sadly, I believe so. This movement that I've dubbed as, boycott, with emphasis, of course, on the word boy there. It's just the most effective way to say no. Enough is enough. I'm not even going to allow you to discriminate against me on the basis of my sex. I think it's what we need to see. We've seen it in volleyball, right? You think of the Mountain West Conference, those five teams.
Right.
Boise State, University of Wyoming, Utah State, Southern Utah, and University of Nevada at Reno all weren't willing to play against San Jose State University. We saw the West Virginia girls, right? These were middle schoolers who in track and field, actually in shot put, a boy is about to throw with them, and these girls, they get up in the circle and they act like they're going to throw, and then they walk out. We saw Stephanie Turner, the fencer. We've seen Abby Wilson, the disc golfer. It's a growing movement, and truthfully, John, I wish I had this courage when I was competing, when I was faced with this issue. I didn't. I really didn't. But of course, I've grown. I've evolved. I'm so much more secure in my stance and understanding. Again, there's nothing to apologize for in standing for reality, standing for women. I didn't realize that at the time. So I think these women are incredibly brave and courageous.
It's sad that they have to do that, though. That's the one thing that every time I see these, I admire them. I'm proud of them.
And yet I feel sorry for them that they have to take that stand, because it's unfortunate. I mean, they're giving up their opportunities for scholarships, for advancement, for trophies, for whatever, but they're, at least they're taking a principled stand. It's just sad that they have to do that.
There are so many people who failed them to allow it to get to that point, right? If you're looking at the young girls, again, like the West Virginia girls, their parents, their coaches, the athletic director, the principal. I mean, you could point fingers all day long. When 13, 14-year-old girls have to bear the burden of defending themselves, again, that's a tragic scenario. And it's easier said than done. I see a lot of people on social media who are conservatives, who are on our side on this issue, who are frustrated when girls don't boycott. Look, it is so much easier to say, you know, just step down, just don't compete, than to actually do it. Like, these girls have dedicated their entire lives in most cases to be able to compete, to be able to succeed. And again, I know, speaking in you know, and my own personal experience here, that national championships, it was the culmination of my career. It was the pinnacle of our sport. It's the fastest meet in the world. It's not easy to ask a girl to just step down and not compete, although I wish it was. It's not.
Well, and it's not only the principals and leaderships in universities. Look at what happened in Congress recently. The United States Senate, not a single Democrat would step up and vote for a bill that just protected and codified women's sports.
But then they show up the next day. It was the joint address to Congress the next day, which I was watching from the gallery. And the day after 45 U.S. Democratic senators vote no in opposition of protecting women and girls in sports, you have all of them, all of the women at least, in Congress and Senate, show up wearing pink to symbolize how they defend women's rights, which was remarkable to me. The gaslighting that they are projecting, they are banking on the American people being, number one, uninformed, and number two, too lazy to do their own research. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Americans who fall into that category. But I see right through it. These people don't defend women. They can't even define what a woman is. How can you defend what you can't even define?
That's true.
They hate women, quite frankly.
Speaking of women's sports, I have to ask you about what we're seeing right now overseas, across the pond, so to speak, the Women's Pool Billiards Championship, again, women's, and the two competitors are both biological males.
They really took "Made the Best Man Win" to like a whole new level here. I
mean, you'd think this was a Benny Hill skit or something.
Truthfully, it is like the first thought that I had. Honestly, you want to laugh at it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, why am I laughing at this? Like, real people, real women are being affected. There are real consequences here that women are having to bear. But you laugh because it's like a South Park episode.
Yes.
It's like a Babylon Bee headline. And I just pictured it in my head. You know, both of these men got to the final and were pissed that they were competing against another man. They're like, dang, I thought I was going to have the opportunity to trample on some women here. So, again, it's almost so ironic that it's funny. But again, to remember, like, there are real women who are losing out on prize money. And I've seen people tweet or post or whatever it is saying, you know, even again, people on our side who say, look, well, there's not really a safety concern here. There's no advantages that men possess over women in pool or billiards. Look, so long as there is a woman's category, it should be reserved for women.
Yeah.
If you want to have a separate conversation about making it gender neutral or making it co-ed or mixed sport or whatever, that's a separate discussion. But so long as there's a woman's division, it should be only for women.
Yeah, it's still an opportunity, be it for scholarships or prize money or a Wheaties box or whatever. It should be. And again, it's a matter of respect. It's a matter of dignity and opportunity. And that's why, you know, you mentioned earlier when we first started about this still being a battle that we have to fight. And I think some people are getting complacent. You know, heaven forbid Kamala Harris won that election, because Lord knows what she would do. But here we've got congressional elections coming up not too long. We'll have a presidential election in 3 years. And That's all it's going to take, is for us to lose ground. We may have won a battle, but the war still rages, right? It won't take anything for us to lose ground, and they'll be right back at it.
Well, number one, if Kamala Harris had won on November 5th, I genuinely, truthfully, from the bottom of my heart, believe we would be in World War III right now. And yeah, to your point, look, they've allowed the reason they've been able to acquire every inch of the public square in the way that they have, including, of course, our government, media, entertainment, Hollywood, corporate America, academia, like the list goes on. I mean, healthcare, it doesn't matter. They've acquired every inch of the public square. The Democrats have. It's because they have laid the groundwork over decades.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are under the assumption that, you know, over the past 5 years, they've really been able to succeed with all of this. It's been going on so much longer than 5 years. It's been decades they've laid this groundwork. That's why it's the same groundwork that allowed them to carry out the actions and the manipulation that we saw with COVID. It's the same thing with the gender ideology movement. So many parallels in terms of the emotional blackmail, the manipulation, coercing people to, again, ignore what they know to be true, what they know to be reality, in both cases actually biological reality. So while it's great that we're seeing the Trump administration really do a lot of exposing and highlighting the problems, it's really just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, it is so nice to see you again. You know, I love having you on and folks at the center, which I'm just so proud of you. I remember when you were just starting this fight and what you've been able to do. What's next? Are you going to run for office or something? I mean, when am I going to get to see you on a ballot or something? I'm just so proud of what you've been able to do. I notice, again, you're wearing the XX is not equal to XY t-shirts. I know you've got that. What's next on your playbook?
You know, it's such a good question because I feel like I've approached that question, you know, what's next for you, pretty selflessly over the past few years. Because
yes, you got married. Like, that was one.
Getting married, you know, like all of the things. But it's like wherever I need to be, I'm there. But now, again, like I feel like we're in a place where now we at least have the ability to have impact. So it is like I get to kind of look at this now, like, what do I want to do? You mentioned running for office. I don't think I'm that, like, clinically insane yet. I think you do have to be like a level of clinically insane to run for office.
Or a narcissist, and you're not that much of a narcissist.
Totally. God bless the good people who do, because we absolutely need them. But you know, I don't know if that's for me yet. Truthfully, I think the next step for me is family. I think that's where me and my husband go. We've been married for 3 years. Of course, still fighting this fight and the subsequent battles that come with it. My husband and I, we've been dealing with the battle of immigration, given the fact that he's from across the pond. Of course, legal immigration. So have been kind of immersed into that space. The battle of school choice is another one that I feel very passionately about. Being a voice for the unborn, again, another cultural battle that I just feel so passionately about. So, of course, there are still, I mean, I will continue to be an activist. Because truthfully, I think we need more activists on our side. Again, the side of common sense, the side of sanity. So I'll continue doing that, and we'll see where that leads.
Well, I love you. It's so good to see you again, and we'll keep in touch. And maybe the next time you make a swing through the Midwest, we'll have to follow you to that one as well.
I'm there. Thank you. You're the best.
She's such a rock star. It's a great time. I was glad to sit down with her and glad to share that interview with you again. I know I had a number of you who didn't hear it when we played it for you a couple weeks ago, and glad to play that for you again. Sort of our Easter. There's your Easter chocolate. There's your Easter treat for you. We'll take a quick break. What do you think? You're listening to what should Riley do next? Because I love for her to run for office. Maybe she could run for, I don't know. I was going to say governor of Kansas, but you know, we already got like 13 people doing that. So, but, you know, we do need somebody to run for Sharice Davidson's seat. I would love that. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. My friends at Americans for Prosperity for Kansas believe freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. It's a great way to get involved. If you're looking for a way to get involved in a campaign or just help inform voters, great way to do it. Get involved with AFP. They're great folks. Prosperity-minded, conservative, and just a great way to get involved if you're looking for ways to get involved. And, of course, while you're online, check out the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, a True Social page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Those are the best ways to stay involved to get all the latest updates on the show. Let me share an interesting story, with a little bit of a tidbit. It's a shocking new poll. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the show, actually. But majority of Americans identifying as left of center politically believe that murdering President Trump would be justified. I'm looking forward. That's our next guest, actually. We're going to talk about this. But, yeah, 1,300 Americans, 38% believe it would be somewhat justified to murder President Trump.
Where's that scene in air? Is that scene in Airplane where everyone does a face palm
head smack? Yes.
All at the same time?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, and what prompted me to think of this was, you know, when I was up in Lawrence and talked to some of the protesters outside of the Riley Gaines deal. And, you know, you're talking to some of these protesters. And I remember the guy who had the sign that said, gays for Palestine, trans gay. And I walked up to him and I asked him, he says, yes, I'm gay, I'm trans, and I support, you know, Palestine. And I said, do you realize that, you know, what your chances of actually, first off, you couldn't protest if you were actually in Palestine.
Right.
And you couldn't, you know, what happens to gay people in Palestine under Hamas? Oh, well, Hamas isn't the government. I say, yeah, Hamas is the government. And if they found out you were gay, they'd take you out back and shoot you, pal. He just, you know, these people, some of them just don't get it. So they're just not grounded. And the level of Trump derangement syndrome among these folks is just shocking. And it's like that email that Lily Wu got. Mm-hmm. I hate you. You know, racist language, love, peace, love, hope, happiness. You know, it's like, what? Love, hope, peace, happiness. Hate, hate, hate. These protesters, it's just so funny.
So, okay, so I thought that your man on the street segments last week, I thought it were great.
Oh, the ones up in Lawrence. Yeah. They were, you know.
And it wasn't confrontational. It was just a matter of getting the back and forth.
Well, I wasn't going to be confrontational, but they could have been. But yeah, and I think it helps that I'm not going there, obviously, wearing a MAGA hat or anything like that. Or tonight, I've got a hat, by the way, for those who are wondering. I've got a hat tonight that says Trump 2024, the sequel. If I'd worn that, I'd get attacked. But, you know, no, I just wore my logo shirt, my KNSS logo shirt. That way they know I'm legitimate, quote unquote, media, you know, which I don't consider myself media, but, you know, they did.
So do you have any plans for a NASCAR Park?
Yes, as a matter of fact, my buddy Andy Hoosier,
okay,
from, you know, the station across town. From the station across town, that sort of like Voldemort, you know, the station that shall not be named. Andy Hoosier, otherwise known as Voldemort. But no, my buddy Andy Hoosier. He's
going to appreciate that.
No, he's going to love it. Okay. I'm going to start calling him Voldemort. Andy Voldemort Hoosier and I are going to go down to NASCAR Park this Saturday.
Okay.
So we're going to go down there on Saturday and try and do some man on the street interviews and talk to people and, you know, just see why, because they've been doing this stuff now for a couple months, and they go down there every noon. You know, they do it on Saturdays. I imagine they could probably do it any other day of the week, because I'm sure they don't have jobs. But they're going to go down there, and, you know, we're just going to ask them why. What are you doing? What are you hoping to do? What's the message? What are you hoping? Because I remember when they were outside of the AFP event with Ron Estes, and it was the same crowd. And I went out and talked to them then. I just didn't have a mic, so I couldn't actually record these conversations. But it was the same kind of stuff. I mean, I had a great conversation with one of them then. And he talked about, you know, I'm so glad to be here. And there's so much love and there's so much unity and we're just love around us. And then I asked him about the people who were in with Ron Estes. Oh, they're stupid and we hate it. There's hate. And I'm sitting here going, dude, you just talked about love. And then he was just spousing hateful things and they're fascists, they're Nazis, they're this and that and the other. Love and Nazi. You know, it's TDS.
It's love if you follow their narrative.
It's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's love, peace, tolerance, as you agree with them. The minute they find out that you don't agree with them or you don't drink the Kool-Aid or you're not in their little clique, then it's hate, 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 hate. And the love and tolerance and peace and all that stuff goes right out the window. So
I know. But no, that'll be next Saturday. We're going to do that. So we'll play the highlights of that next Sunday. Should be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be fun. Hopefully, you know, Andy will wear, because Andy's a little more confrontational than I am. Hopefully he'll wear body armor. We'll take a quick break to pay a few bills, and then writer, speaker, and political commentator Teddy Pierce will share the shocking results of that poll that we just discussed, where a majority of Americans identifying as left of center believe murdering President Trump would be justified. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, a shocking new poll has discovered that a majority of Americans identifying as left of center politically believe that murdering President Trump would be justified. The survey was conducted by the Network Contagion Research Institute, which describes itself as a neutral or independent organization. It found a total of 55% of leftists responding to the poll said that the use of deadly violence against their political enemies is acceptable. Your guess is as good as mine on this one, folks. With us now to kind of walk us through this is writer, speaker, and political commentator Teddy Pierce. Teddy, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Hey, great to be on with you. Wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah.
Dark subject here.
Yeah, it is. Happy Easter, by the way.
Hey, he has risen indeed.
Yes. Okay, so I'm looking at these numbers. This is an overall survey of 1,300 Americans. 38% of the respondents said it would be at least somewhat justified. I mean, I know that, is this just Trump derangement syndrome, or do these people actually think that there's a justification to kill somebody that they disagree with?
Oh, well, there's so many things at play here. You know, I guess I'm not telling tales out of school to say that we've gone under a little bit of social decay over the last 50 or 60 years.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, the broader topic or the broader point here is that we're dealing with a cultural divide. We're dealing with a social and cultural divide in the country. And we're getting to this point where really the difference between the political left and the political right, it's not falling along this blue-red corridor like we're so used to. And we're really getting into a true ideological and philosophical divide. We're getting to the fancy philosophical word of a different anthropology, like truly a different way of looking at the human person, who they are in society, and how we decide things, really, just even on the most basic level. That's the divide that we're seeing in this polarity in this modern age. And, unfortunately, it's by design. And there are a lot of mechanisms that have brought us to this point. But to get to the point where you say the person on the other side deserves violence and to make it that pronounced and widespread, well, it takes a very long concerted effort.
Yeah.
To get to this point.
Well, and it's the same thing with these folks that, are idolizing, celebrating, whatever word you want to use, the Luigi Mangione, the guy that killed the hospital CEO, I mean, or the insurance CEO. It's
you know, there are women out there that want to marry him. There are leftists who are sympathizing with him or saying that he was justified because, you know, our healthcare system. Yeah, our healthcare system may be flawed. It still doesn't justify political violence. It doesn't justify walking up behind a guy and capping him, putting two in his head. You know, it's just, the other thing that I find shocking in all of this is how it's become sort of acceptable for so many people.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And what we are dealing with in this, what I call, and I don't think, again, that I'm being too bombastic in saying, we're dealing with fifth generation warfare, and we're dealing with a system that has brought in this level of subterfuge in our culture and normalize this type of behavior.
Yeah, normalize, yes. Yeah.
And you know, the point is not to make us stronger. It's not to make us wiser and better to deal with our political decisions. Of course, it's meant for destroying our society. It's meant for, just as we see in Marxism with critical theory, knocking everything down to a mere power struggle, and so that we're at each other's throats and fighting each other on this barbaric level, while the people who have orchestrated it all come to claim their prize.
The normalizing political violence, that's a great way of putting it, because that is, in many ways, what we're seeing here. We're talking with political commentator Teddy Pierce, and I completely agree. That is what they're going for. And the other thing that I think we're seeing, and I'm surprised about it, I'm disappointed, frankly, that we're seeing it, is the fact that so few on the other side of the aisle are condemning it. Where you see that, I mean, they pay lip service to it, but so often Democrats are refusing to disavow it, while mouthpieces like Jimmy Kimmel are actively encouraging it in some cases. It's, you know, where's the vociferous declarations that this is wrong? Instead, they kind of explain it, or they just don't give it any airtime at all.
Right. Well, yeah, the political actors, and of course, this is all a soundstage, you know, this is all
right.
Kabuki theater.
Yes.
And so the political actors, they have to make their certain, they have to avoid it at all costs.
Right. They play a little tiny bit of lip service and then move on.
Right. Right. And then, of course, the folks in Hollywood and late night TV get to celebrate it in a very different way. But you know, that really is the signature of this divide of saying, like, it's not a difference between do we have morals or where do we draw the line or anything like that. Especially with the, you know, you clearly laid it out there. It's true relativism. It is true, like, denial of any sense or a standard or morals or goodness. It's either, you know, now the political divide is clear. You've got to get on board. You either have to just get on your team and cheer for whatever happens, no matter what, or maybe if you have any problem with that, well, we're going to kick you out of the party. Bill Maher included, you know,
right.
I don't have any good things to say about Bill Maher, but that's really what we're dealing with, is this: you are going to get on board with our program or get out.
Do you think this really started to ratchet up? Because I noticed it really started in, you know, the riots back in 2020, the BLM riots, where the left, the mainstream media, of course, it was peaceful protests. It wasn't riots. It was mostly peaceful protests. They weren't really prosecuted. It was all about sympathy. Yeah, you know, I remember the infamous footage of MSNBC commentators standing in front of buildings on fire and downplaying it. And then on the flip side, January 6th is the greatest tragedy since World War II, and it's absolutely chaos and violence and murder and mayhem, and the world's coming, you know, cats and dogs
and, you know, tens of thousands of people dead. And I mean, they made it out like it was a Holocaust. But, you know, the BLM riots, nothing, just a minor, nothing happening. It reminded me of Leslie Nielsen from the Naked Gun movies. Nothing to see here, folks. Move along.
I mean, yes.
That's kind of where this, for me, it really where this all started.
Yes, and definitely with the riots in 2020, and you know, you can pile on a lot of other things that were responsible for that, but you're exactly right that it was just a signature moment of we don't care anymore. We're not even going to try to explain. Yeah,
we're not going to hide it.
Ourselves. Yeah, and this is what we're about, and we are willing and ready to burn the country down just to hand the ashes over to our globalist overlords who are driving this whole narrative, you know?
That's a good analogy. Teddy, if folks want to connect with you, if they want to hook up with you on social media, what's the best way for them to find you?
I'm on X at TeddyP1776. DethronedDavos.com is the website, and you can get the book Dethroned Davos on Amazon.
Teddy, I appreciate you, my friend. Again, thank you for joining us, and I hope you had a very happy Easter, my friend.
I did. I hope you did as well.
Yes, I did. Thank you. Thank you. We'll take a quick break, and of course, our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget to check out my friends at AmericansForProsperity.org. It's a great way for you to get involved, make your voice heard today. And, of course, we also want to remind you, listen in for my carry-on commentaries. That's my 60-second daily features. You'll hear those every day, Monday through Friday, three times a day, right here on KNSS. Phil. I was thinking of Dave.
Yeah.
Because that song, that was mm-hmm. side of Dave's song. Yeah. He loved that song. So
we always say, Dave!
That's right. We always play that. That's our out song in the last segment. I don't know if you saw, he's taken over the morning show on KEYN.
Yeah. Congratulations, yes, to Dave. Those are huge shoes to fill, yes, because he's such a consummate professional.
Yeah, I love Dave.
Yeah.
He was, and Dave was, now I gotta admit, you're pretty good. You're,
oh, well.
Yeah, I will say, since you're here, you're better than Dave. You are better than Dave. But I'm looking forward to hearing. So, kudos to Dave Wilson. Filling in or taking over the morning show on KEYN. I can't remember when that starts, but it's like
it's soon.
Yeah. So very happy for him. And I still, when I saw the email that came out this week, I still emailed him and said, you know, if you don't want to do that, you can always come back on here and sub in with Phil on rare occasion when I don't have him. So, but yeah, kudos to Dave for that. It's really kind of cool. So. But yeah, every time I hear that song, I think of Dave. Dave and I used to, we kind of rap. You know, it was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Sort of like you and I do.
Yeah.
So he, you know, it's fun. Dave's politically savvy, which helps to have the conversation like you are. You know, mm-hmm. you know what you're talking about.
Well, I attempt to anyway, but.
You're too good. No, you're good. I mean, it's like, at least you know what you're talking about when you ask questions. You know, you prompt me with good questions. And
well, I will say ever since taking over the producer duties, I will say that you have made me more
annoyed.
Marked? No. Actually, it makes me more aware. I think I find myself tuning in more to different media points, different media discussions, and I want to know more. I want to be knowledgeable. And so it helps me to do this show better with you and interact with you. So I think it's made me a better person of understanding how this whole crazy political.
Oh, and it is. Trust me. This was a crazy political week for me.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was on the news. For those of you who don't know, I don't want to get into it. But, you know, I think the audience knows that I'm also the chair of the Sedgwick County Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And we had some business that we had to do. And we didn't end up doing it, but we had some business Thursday night, and two of the TV stations and two reporters from the Wichita Eagle were there.
And, you know, both the TV networks wanted an interview. And I literally told them, I said, can we do this on the air? Can we do this on radio? Because I have a face for radio. I do not like doing TV. I've lost 30 pounds, but I still have, you know, more weight to lose. And just, I don't like doing TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just not, you know, I got more gray hair than I used to. And
I think we're all.
I just don't like doing TV. Yeah. I like the radio. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, I especially like tonight. It's like people ask, how come I don't do the, because like who, like, you know, Andy Voldemort, he does the camera in the studio. Mm-hmm. And people have asked, hey, how come you don't do a camera? And I said, because I can wear a ball cap, not shave, come in a t-shirt, and I don't have to, you know, if I had a camera in here, I'd have to actually dress the part.
Is Andy dapper? I'll admit, I have not.
I wouldn't call him dapper. Have you seen his hair? I mean, he's got, oh boy, he's going to kill me for this. He's got this, well, you know, I mean, I call it a rat tail, but he's got this, you know, this mm-hmm. ponytail thing going down. That's, I mean, it's cool. It's, you know, Viking kind of looking thing.
I don't know.
I couldn't pull it off, but he pulls it off.
I think camera in the studio, I think it works for some shows. I know, over on our sister station, KFH, yeah. I know they do, cameras in the studio.
I can't imagine Steve McIntosh wanting a camera in the studio.
Well, I don't know. That might be okay.
I would do it if I, you know, if they wanted to put it in here, I'd be happy putting it in here. But I don't think the morning show guys would probably want it. But, you know, heck, if they put it in here, I'd be happy. Well, I'd just have to, you know, shave. Because it's Sunday night. We get up and go to church. And then, you know, other than that, I don't want to have to shave again. I'd have to dress up and not wear a hat.
I mean, I go to church on Sundays, so that would mean that no longer can I change after church. I probably ought to stay.
Right. See, I'm the same way. After church, I can come home, throw on a hat, and just relax for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. No, see, if we had a camera in here, I'd have to. Yeah, and we couldn't watch. You know, right now we're watching baseball. We'd have to try and behave, put Fox News on, and act mm-hmm. like we're actually paying attention, which, you know, yeah, see, now we're giving away all our secrets.
Oh, well.
I know.
That's all right.
It's okay.
Okay, I have a question to ask you. Okay,
I have an answer. Does that have to be the right one?
Well, as long as you're okay with it, as long as you're right.
Then, okay.
Okay, so from back in your days in the legislature,
right.
Did you ever have a session that finished as quickly as this one did?
This was a record. This was the record.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's and in part the reason. So by law, by statute, they have to finish in 90 days.
Okay.
Now that's, it depends on how you do it. In even years, it's 90 days by statute. In an off year, then like this is an off year. So they don't actually have to finish in 90 days. They can go long because this is usually the budget year. In an election year, they have to finish in 90 days, period. You cannot go over. So let's start there. What they chose to do here is they actually chose to call it 90 actual calendar days. So they counted Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay. All right.
Typically, when I was in the legislature, it was 90 actual working days. So Saturdays and Sundays, they didn't count those. In addition, we had what was called pro forma days, where like a Monday would or a Friday would be pro forma because there was no major work going on or of committee work. And that gives the revisers, which is the attorneys, or staff time to catch up. I think the biggest complaint that I heard from legislators was staff wasn't able to, the staff was getting really overworked this session.
Right.
And the revisers were getting really overworked. This is, I think, one of the other complaints that I think they heard was they were just really burdened because of the accelerated timeline. On the flip side, you know, the shorter they're in there, the less they can mess things up. Well, so was efficient. It didn't cost as much because they're in, they're out, and they're done.
Joking aside, that's absolutely true.
I mean, typical sessions they get the early April, they end, and then they take the month of April off, and then it's at the end of April that they go back for the veto session, which could last a week, and then they do sine die in May. So that's a typical session.
I see.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, they've already done veto session and signed. They're done. Yeah. They're gone.
Yeah.
They won't be back until you ask me when they come back. They come back in January
of next year, of 2026.
They're done.
Wow.
And now part of that is because you've got some major key players that are likely to announce runs for office very soon.
Yes. Governor being the number one.
I would think you will see some major players in the legislature running for governor. Mm-hmm. There will be other major players in the legislature who've been on this show running for other statewide offices. I know who they are. I'm not going to say it. I'll let them make their announcements.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when that happens, other things will fall. So there's some significant announcements that are to come. Now that may be a factor. I don't know. I don't think any of them said we need to rush through session so I can run for office. But I do think a lot of it is they want to get in and out, be efficient, and, you know, see if they could do it. And they did. Now, whether this will be a permanent change or, you know, just something that they do this session, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's pros and cons to it. Yeah. For sure.
That was a quick session.
But it was a very quick session. But they still got all their work done.
They got done what they wanted
to get done. To their credit. Mm-hmm. They got all their work done. They forced Laura Kelly to work on their timeline. So, you know, I credit them for getting a lot of work done and saving money, which is always a bonus. So, folks, thank you again. I hope you had a very happy Easter. And carry on, fellow deplorables.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.